You're listening to the Digital Void Podcast, where we explore digital culture, media, technology, and memes, featuring critical and empowering conversations with experts at the forefront of our digital moment. My name is Josh Chapdelaine, and my co-host is Dr. Jamie Cohen. How do YouTube influencers undermine their audiences into taking lifestyle advice? Internet culture writer Steffi Sau joins Jamie to discuss how influencers neg their audiences with video titles that are not quite as negative as you would believe. The two discuss authenticity on social media platforms, why clickbait titles still reign supreme, and if there's anything positive to come of this trend. Now, here's this week's conversation with internet culture writer Steffi Sau.
All right. Hey, Steffi, how are you?
I'm good, Jamie. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time today. I was just, as usual, coming across your work. And a recent piece of work that you put together had me questioning some of the things that are informational about tactics, tactical media in digital spaces, and the way that I think the internet is aging and how younger audiences are engaging with content. And so you wrote this piece, this really amazing piece recently called YouTube Influencers Want to Neg You Into Taking Their Lifestyle Advice. And of course, your headline is as part of the story as much as the stories that you're talking about, which is headline writing for YouTube videos in which they want to basically capture an emotion into somebody's feelings. So they go and click on it and then they watch it. First example, I'll just give the three examples you start in the first paragraph. Congrats, you've ruined your face. Creator Stephanie Lang. Wizard Liz, the Wizard Liz writes, how to stop being lazy and pathetic and declaring you're a clown has titles. And you write this as title negging. So can you explain a little bit? The term I think is important because not many people actually may know that term negging and where that term comes from. So are they considering it negging or is that something you labeled onto it? And how did you come across this story?
It's definitely something I labeled onto it. And as someone obviously who is not obviously, but I am very entrenched in lifestyle content creation spaces, it's something that, you know, a lot of women, when they're looking for serviceable content online, something that we turn to a lot, you know, fashion, beauty, makeup. And a lot of these lifestyle creators have pivoted towards like this sort of like titling and particularly focusing on not just external beauty, but there's a lot of emphasis on like internal beauty as well, and like how to level up, how to exit your lazy girl era, how to become that girl, productive girl, it girl. So it really is like lifestyle content meant not just for external things you can do to improve yourself, but also the sort of like internal improvement as well, which is where these titles come into play. And I think a lot of creators have found a lot of success in capturing this sort of sentiment that is shared primarily by women, but of course it can be applied to any user who feels insecure about something about themselves that is more than skin deep. I feel like I started noticing this kind of titling maybe a few months, I would say like up to a year ago. And I think it has only grown with popularity since. Obviously, I think someone like the Wizard Liz, who first has amassed tens of millions of followers across TikTok, YouTube, for speaking straight to women about how they can stop entertaining broke men and get the bag and like all these things. I found it to be, you know, to me, it seems like negging. One, because I love a little tongue-in-cheek phrase for it, but it really is. I mean, all marketing to some sense is manipulation, right? And so negging the term itself, it is a manipulation tactic mostly seen applied to relationships when a manipulator will like almost like bully a person into like doing something for them. I think that's my understanding of negging at least.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So it's cool. I think that's interesting that I'm actually kind of glad to hear your term use of that because what caught my eye immediately was the term negging for me comes down to like a tactic, you know, and the tactic like has its era in like late 90s, early 2000s PUA like work, the manosphere type of space where the tactic was to push people down so they feel less secure about themselves to where they would scoop in and basically love bomb them into, you know, being attracted to them. And so I always felt it as a negative connotation. It's neat to see it on the forefront because I think a lot of these influencers recognize their role in these spaces now. I think they know that they're advertisers. So from your interviews here, are they owning this? Like before we get into the content itself, are they owning the idea of headline writing? Like I know the journalists don't always get to write their own headlines, but YouTubers do. You know, they have to figure out how to get somebody to click and interact with their content.
Yeah, and that's what I really loved about reporting this piece was speaking. I spoke to Zoe Unlimited, who also has amassed like 3 million subscribers, really for these video essays that sort of use these titles like K-pop is destroying your brain or congrats, you're ugly and like things like that. And what I loved about talking to her was, you know, she was very open about the fact that like, yeah, I want a title that will jump out. I want a headline or a thumbnail that will like appear big and eye-catching because there's so much content and I need to be able to get someone to stop in their scroll. And what I love is she really thinks about this packaging as sort of like this journey that she's going on. Like, here, I'm going to identify the insecurities that you have, that I have, and then we're going to like sort of go in this deeper exploration together, which I really enjoyed hearing about. And I did appreciate that she was not shying away from the fact that like, no, I'm trying to get your attention. This is the economy. This is the currency.
Yeah. And I'm actually just I'm currently reading Kyle Chayka's book, Filter World. And I was reading about how there was all these iterations of the algorithm. And we go all the way back to like Etan Spartz, the king of clickbait back in like, remember dot.com or whatever it was? It was like,
that's a little beyond my years, Jamie. I'm not gonna lie to you.
it was like the earliest age of clickbait where it was designed specifically to grab people's attention. And then BuzzFeed basically adopted that as their headline style. And what it was doing was to game the algorithm. Like it was designed specifically to figure out how to get people to really like lean into doing this. And I was just like trying to feel like this, are we at this point now? Like, do you really feel like a lot of the ways that we get people to actually engage with our content requires that type of nagging attitude, like to make you feel like shit before you click on it and go into it?
I mean, this tactic is something that like we, like especially in women's spaces has been used like since the dawn of time, right? Like there's something wrong with you, you have wrinkles, like you're ugly, that's wrong, you need to fix it. I mean, that's been a thing since, you know, infomercials, like ads, any sort of like pre-Dove's body positivity campaign, you know, before any of that, any beauty brand has been a marketing tactic since the dawn of time. But I do think that with, especially online, there is, like I said, such a saturation of content where the barrier to be an influencer is lower than ever. And there seems to be just an overwhelming amount of advice on how to improve yourself, and particularly in the lifestyle space, like what you can do to like better yourself in this certain way. And so, yeah, I think it does make sense that this is the natural evolution then for creators to say, you know what, then I'm going to get something that is equally salacious, because that's really like what clickbait was at the time, right? I think about like David Dobrik and like Logan Paul, like the you'll never believe what happened next. But at that point, you know, it's, you know, at this point, it's like, okay, I could probably guess what happens next. And it's a vlog. Like, so I think.
Right. You kind of have a sense of what's going to go on in that video. Yeah.
And so you need something else where it really draws and preys on an emotion to get someone to click in and engage with your content. And if the product is good, then, you know, you've got an active subscriber.
Right. And I think that's where it brings me to the content, which, so you have Zoe's videos. There's one where she clicks in and the content itself wasn't nagging. It wasn't designed specifically. So somebody clicked in worrying if they have a fat face or something. So they go in and they're just like, oh my gosh, this video is going to make me figure out how to make that happen. And the rest of the content was actually a positivist view of like why the woman was beautiful, you know, like why that's important. I feel like the internet moves to extremes. You know, I always feel like when we make content, it normalizes all the other content. And so everybody kind of rides that line of like what everybody's doing. So if somebody starts doing like angry content or rage bait or all this other stuff, then eventually everything becomes rage bait. And then you have to become more raged to make people click on it. But I kind of like this bait and switch. You know, I kind of like this tactic because it's almost like a revolt against the tactics of rage bait. Is that a healthy thing? Is this where we are? Like, I feel like, is this, in other words, is this authentic? Like, is Zoe interested in actually making people feel better? Or is this a tactic to grow followers?
I think that's a tough thing about the influencer economy, right? Is that these two things go hand in hand. From when I spoke to her, her understanding was, I really want women to go in with a certain insecurity and come out of it feeling empowered, feeling motivated, feeling they're ready and enough and beautiful and everything, you know, all positive emotions. They want her, she was like, I want my viewers to go on this journey that, you know, circles back to a very empowering feeling. And that's what I really want my content to be. Of course, however, like the motivation and the lifeblood of influencers is to make money and to, you know, have track engagement. And so this is like a question less about just is this an influencer, but can, like, you know, liberation and capitalism go hand in hand, and the sense of like, can you really empower women while making money off of it? And so that's, I think, the question more so than like, are these influencers doing the right thing or the wrong thing or healthy or unhealthy thing? Because this is just a symptom of a much larger problem.
Yeah. So as Gen Z starts becoming the audience, like, and then Gen Alpha coming into the space, like, it reminds me of like the influencers who are using adult products. And I don't mean like sex objects. I mean like retinol. I mean like things that are like meant for like people that may be using cosmetics or so forth. But young people are engaging with the content in such a way that it's creating a physical reaction, like young girls 8 to 11 years old going to Sephora and kind of creating chaos. So this content itself, I think, is important because if you're able to engage with the Gen Alpha groups or like late Gen Z or whatever, I don't even know where that border is at that point. How are creators like this going to get the endorsement deals necessary for them to sustain themselves if they're like basically doing positive content? Like, how do they work hand in hand? Is that possible? Like, in the, it's as a creator economy, it's not just the content coming in, but it's about wearing that label on you, you know?
I mean, obviously, as this entire economy has grown, this industry has grown, we're starting to see a lot of genres meshing that you maybe traditionally wouldn't see otherwise. So I think a lot of these lifestyle influencers, when they do the kind of content, they partner with like a therapy service or sort of like a like self-help, like an Audible, like that will, you know, here's a self-help book I love. There's always a product to be marketed, and it's just about finding that right angle. And so I think brands have done a really interesting job of being able to pivot and stay on their toes, especially when you do understand the creator economy and how these sorts of videos operate.
So you may mention at the beginning, anyone can do it. And I've been struggling with that recently because I've been thinking about like the tiers of influencers. So if she has like 3 million followers, like that's a lot of labor and it's a lot of work to get to that. And like the clickbait titling is like just part of it. I've been asking myself lately, can anybody do it? Like, is it possible for anybody to really become part of the creator economy? Can anybody be an influencer this level? Are these tools teachable, or is it like TV where you have stars and you don't have stars? You have people that are famous and you don't. Do young people who are just joining TikTok, assuming that it just sticks around, and just joining YouTube, are they going to mimic this? Are they going to forge their own path? Are they going to find their own niche that's going to do something for the future in some other way?
I do think it is a really interesting question regarding like, to what extent can you be a celebrity on social media? Because obviously, even though, yes, the barrier is lower than ever, anyone can pick up a phone and go viral, obviously, virality is not the only metric by which people are measuring success anymore. It's hugely about engagement, about community, about how well you're able to pivot out, start different brands, create products beyond, you know, the intangible sort of digital video. So obviously, you can have people who come up and hit like micro influencer level. I feel like there's a huge middle class of influencers too that are maybe not creating the biggest brand deals, but they're probably bringing home around like the average American salary, probably around like a 50K from this job. But there is truly a 1% of influencers that are raking in the biggest brand deals, have the biggest outreach, are able to hold stake in a lot of back end companies. And that in itself, I think, is also indicative of like, this is sort of like, you know, like there are TV stars, there are like actors who get their work done and clock in, clock out, and it's a job. But there are sort of like bona fide TV stars that we see and we know and we love as TV, film, movie stars who are able to branch out and become producers, directors, you know, do more behind the scenes, and where you get most of the money. So I think that's sort of like what I'm thinking about in terms of like the success level and ceilings of influencers is, of course, it's an economy, so there's going to be nuances. But with someone like Zoe Unlimited, when you have such a major following, obviously that takes work. What I loved about our interview too is she was like, I don't feel very famous. Because I think her idea of fame is that like an Emma Chamberlain's, like you can title it anything and people will watch it no matter what. Whereas what I understood from our conversation was she still relies on content and engaging with you as viewer, you know, here's how it relates to you, here's how this is serviceable to you in order to track engagement. And so I think that is a really interesting thing to think about in terms of like, okay, so you don't feel famous because you as human, as a person, as a persona, are not the end all be all of your success. It is still about servicing. So I thought that was interesting.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible. Yeah, that answers my biggest question I think I've been playing with in class, because it's like, I never really thought about the middle class of influencers. Like, there's gotta be, I don't know, let's just think just numerically, potentially a million, you know, because if you think about it, there's a billion channels. So a million would make sense, you know? And so you have to think about that in that middle class, you've got several hundred, maybe tens of thousands of middle class influencers. And you have like the 3 or 4, 5,000 high end, you know? And you're right. Like somebody like Alex Earle doesn't really have to even make content anymore. You know, like she literally gets off a plane and stares at the camera and it's just done. And she's got 3 to 7 million views on that. But somebody like this, it's interesting because you're right. Like this is a career for Zoe Unlimited. And this is their lifestyle. And so they become a star or a micro celebrity. But it's nice to hear that there's earnestness. But I think that what you just said is really important to think about, which is that she still has to play the game. You know, the game is still in process. It is like Hollywood, working your way up, making sure that you've played it. It's not like at a certain point, the casting director is like, I'm making a role for you. It's similar to that because endorsers or advertisers have to have some sort of faith in their influencer, because who are these people? They're just, you know, they're literally anybody. So I guess the last question I have is, are we moved? Like this is a speculative question because this isn't in the piece. And this is more asking you as an expert, as somebody who talks to these influencers much more than many people would ever. Do you feel that there's a positive attitude? Like, do you feel like it's not working for the system, that they feel like they're doing it for themselves? Do you feel like there's an overall mood that's more positive than gaming? Or is that, how does that feel to them?
I like to think so. I think particularly with this title negging movement, I think what I realized was in speaking to these influencers was that they're trying to reach out to women in order to empower them, but want to be able to get right to it and start from this point of like, you have this insecurity. Let's start there, and starting to move into more solutions-based aspect in the content, which I thought was really interesting and not what I expected for like the reporting of the piece. I thought the reporting was going to be a lot more like difficult than it ended up being. I thought people were going to be like, I don't want to say that I'm like preying on young women, because I am. But, you know, I think in speaking to them and hearing their earnestness and hearing their honesty about it, I think that's sort of like, it is sort of like for a bigger cause. I think people like Jeff Wallow or Brittany Broski, who have been able to pivot their channels into something much greater than themselves and maintain their persona through that, I think it is able to ground creators in that way. Of course, you're still going to have people who are in it for themselves, who are just in it for fame, for money, for sponsorships, whatever. But it is nice to see that that's not everybody, because I think obviously the internet like economy, like influencer economy always gets painted out to be that, is like these teenagers who are like, I'm going to get like, fuck you famous. And they're going to just like get on like screen and they're going to make, they came from money. They're going to make even more money, just like putting up a tripod in their room and like dancing. I think it's nice to see that that's not like a monolithic experience, but I do think there is, when I speak to influencers, a bit of sort of like c'est la vie, like I'll just let this algorithm ride and see what happens. Cause I did a really interesting interview with Blogilates, Cassie Ho, and it's so funny to see that she started her career in 2009 on YouTube. Oh, wow. And she's still like, you know what? The algorithm's going to do what it's going to do. And I might still suck at it tomorrow. And I might, you know, not get any hits tomorrow. I'm going to cry about it. And then I'll figure it out again and I'll go viral and I won't. So I think it is really funny to see even people who have been in the game for years and years and years, you know, 15 years kind of thing, still being like, I have no idea what's going on.
That to me is a resilience in that industry. And I think now it's what you're leaning into is this isn't a niche side job anymore. No. This is an actual place. This is a real space for it. And I do appreciate that this writing is becoming more mature as they are becoming more mature. And the industry itself is now an industry. Truly. It's not like a sandbox anymore. Mm-hmm. This is an expert level tactical use of it, and it is cool to see that people are doing it. So thank you so much for putting this together, and thank you for your time today. We really appreciate you, as always, being with us. Thank you.
I love being here. Thank you so much, Jamie. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Steffi for joining us on the Digital Void podcast. For more information, check the show notes and visit digitalvoid.media to learn more.